This is Chris Kessler, and before we get started, I wanted to let you know that we did have some connectivity issues with Eric during the podcast. Some of the audio does cut out at times, but none of the context is lost. We apologize for that delay and hope you still can enjoy the show. Thanks. Let's get going. Welcome to the Edu All-Stars podcast.
Hey guys, it's Todd Nesloni here. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Edu All Stars. With me, I have my co-host.
Hey, you pointed to me, didn't you? I'm Chris Kessler. You can also find me on Twitter at IamKessler.
And today with us, we have a special guest. We have Eric Schininger. He is the principal at New Milford High School in Bergen County, New Jersey. He is passionate about establishing learning environments that are student-centered, collaborative, flexible, and prepare all learners to succeed in the 21st century. In addition to the many awards that he's won, he's also the co-author of two books. He's a blogger for the Huffington Post, co-creator of the Edscape Conference, sits on the FEA Board of Directors, and was named the NSBA 20 to Watch in 2010 for technology leadership. So, Eric, thanks for being here today. You want to go ahead and introduce your name and your Twitter handle?
I am Eric Schininger, and my Twitter handle is at NMHS underscore principal.
Okay, for those of you that missed that, because you kind of cut out, it's NMHS underscore principal. So I guess we'll just go ahead and jump right into the questions, Eric. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about how you got started in the teaching profession?
Well, sort of getting into teaching was just like getting into social media. It happened by a mistake. I did not want to be a teacher. My father is a retired elementary school principal. My mother, a retired first grade teacher. And I swore that I was never going to education. Ironically enough, I'm the only one of our, my three brothers that actually went into education. And while I was pursuing a master's degree in fisheries biology, I was a graduate teaching assistant, and I was just there to get the money and get the free ride and get my master's. But once I started working with college students, I really found that my calling was to be in education. And from there on out, I have spent my rest of my career trying to be a better educator.
That's awesome. Was someone there that like really influenced that decision to become an administrator, not necessarily an educator, but an administrator?
Not when I was at Frostburg State University. I mean, that was basically in higher ed. I was on my own, trying to figure out how to teach college students in the lab portion of the biology classes. So it really was just like when working with them, helping them experience success, and sort of seeing that, wow, I can really get through to kids. I can actually help them learn. This is a lot of fun. Why am I crawling in streams every day looking at fish this big when I could be working with students, helping them develop their passions for learning and ultimately finding success?
And so what was it that made you want to be an administrator instead of just a teacher?
Well, you know, once I went into teaching, I taught for 5 years, I coached three sports, and what I found myself doing was trying to be in situations where I could impact the most students. And I felt, you know, it was sort of a combination of seeing where things were going at my school, thinking about how I would handle situations differently, if I could handle them better, more effectively, more efficiently, and just wanting to do more good for a greater number of students. And, you know, whether it be teaching or coaching, you assume a leadership role in those respective positions. And I felt that I wanted to take it to a greater level, so that I can ultimately positively influence more students than just those that I was directly coming in contact with.
Now, you're also quite the decorated award-winning principal, and I know that some people get really uncomfortable talking about their successes or the awards, but I know for those of us who are in the profession doing all this other stuff, there's a lot of us that really enjoy hearing about the success and the great things that others are doing. But looking at the awards and the recognition that you've had, which one of the ones has really meant the most to you?
Oh, that's a loaded question. They all have special meaning in their own right, but you know, I don't look at it, and it's just honestly the truth. I don't look at it as a personal professional award. Without New Milford High School, my students, my staff, and my community, I can tell you right now, none of those awards would ever have come to fruition. And you know, people can say what they want, but you know, the work that we are doing at New Milford High School, the work that my students have done, my staff, the support from the community, the support from stakeholders there, and even expanding it, you know, showing the work that we're doing and then having it shared by members of my personal learning network, it really is a collective effort. So, you know, I attribute my awards to the hard work of not just the stakeholders in my respective school district, but those that have pushed me to be a better educator and a better leader. You know, they all have their own sentimental value, but the one similarity is it's a direct result of thousands of other people, most specifically those in my district and then everyone else. So they all mean, I guess, the same.
So let's talk a little bit about social media and personal learning networks. One of the first things I did when I got on Twitter, it was probably about a year ago, was, you know, follow you. That's what everyone says to do. Follow Eric, and he's going to give you all kinds of wisdom, and it's going to be fantastic. And sure enough, I sent a tweet out to you, and I don't even remember what it was about, but you responded in about 5 minutes, and it was right then that I had like this just epiphany about how awesome Twitter really was. I mean, it's like, here's this guy that's principal at this high school and responded back to me, and that just really showed how cool you know, the PLN can really be. So one thing you speak about quite often is the power and importance of social media. Can you tell us a little bit about that and maybe your path to becoming real active on social media?
Yeah, you know, to me, social media is the catalyst for conversation. It's what you do with that conversation that truly matters and makes a difference. I really thought social media was the biggest, fattest waste of time. No value to me. Why are people using it? And whatever, because I didn't understand it. I was not educated on how I could use social media to become more effective and efficient as a leader. And, you know, I look at it as a doorway to use, but it really opens you up to just a world of possibilities that can be catalysts for change and ultimate transformation. You know, I don't attribute social media as making me the leader that I am. It just allows me to have an audience to share what we're doing in New Milford High School, what ideas I might have on leadership, education reform, but more importantly, to pick the brains of so many practitioners, which is the main reason why I, you know, social media is my go-to tool, because, you know, I want to learn from those people that are doing the same work that I am, that face the same challenges. But on the other end, you know, using it to be able to connect to world-renowned experts like Todd Whitaker, Diane Ravitch, I mean, you name it, Scott McCloud, Chris Lehman, and, you know, I mean, they're all experts in my mind, and then the practitioners that have, there's so many of them that have had such an impact. I could sit here and list names on and on and on. But yeah, it doesn't really matter, you know, what position people are in. Social media levels the playing field for each and every one of us.
Exactly.
And it just provides that medium for us to engage in conversations. And those conversations are about how we can improve professional practice.
Yeah, I think we're the perfect example of that. We're just a couple of teachers down this rural town in Texas, and we've been talking to all these incredible people on our podcast, and it's just been fantastic. And one of the things I just want to follow up on the social... Go ahead.
But I got to stop you there. I mean, you're saying we two are just teachers. I mean,
yeah,
I'm just
it's not a just, but I don't.
it's not. mean, that's the thing. It's not. I mean, we're all educators, and you know, I'd like to think that we tend to be more resourceful, leveraging and harnessing the tools that are available to become even better. And you know, we're all not just educators, but we're all learners, learning collaboratively in spaces that allow us to connect and share our mutual expertise. Yeah. So when people say that, you know, I'm just a teacher, I'm just a student, I'm just a principal, you know what, with social media, we're all the same because we're all in this space for one thing, and that is to improve student achievement and ensure their success.
Okay, that brings me a follow-up. So 10 years ago, I wasn't in education. I was actually in the tech industry. Do these same conversations happen 10 years ago, or is it because social media allowed these conversations to happen?
Well, the conversations have always happened, just on a much smaller scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the past, we really relied on face-to-face connecting, collaborating, building of partnerships, communicating, and it really relied on where we were at a particular time. And, you know, a lot of the main events that brought educators together for conversation on professional practice were conferences, conventions, they used to call them. My father used to tell me in the good old days, you know, these conventions would last like 4 days. I mean, it was a big, big social aspect, but also a large professional aspect, I'm sorry. But I mean, I think as technology has evolved, first you start with email, then instant messenger, you know, that's, you know, the scale at which people came together started to increase. And I think social media has really dramatically changed the game in terms of being able to connect seamlessly anytime, anywhere, from any device. And we can do it when we want. You know, time is not an issue, distance is not an issue, and money is not an issue because our world is so much more connected. So, you know, if you have the will, there is the way.
I completely agree. And that's what I think has been the biggest thing I know.
And if people want to improve like we are right now I'm not going to stand up, you know, but you know, I'm wearing my shorts here too. I mean, it's great. We can be comfortable, but we can still learn from each other. So I think as technology has evolved, it really has changed the dynamic for us to connect. And I think for those of us that have, you know, discovered this way to, you know, meet our busy schedules and our needs, you know, it's like a tree with endless fruit. And we're just gorging on this endless fruit, and we're always satisfied because we know where to get the knowledge, the resources, the ideas, the feedback, the support. And I just think that we're better off as a global learning community now that we have this, you know, ubiquitous access to each other.
Yeah, I should go back to the original point. As two teachers, we are able to communicate with just amazing people from across the country, and we've, you know, we've had that will to go out and do that, and I think it's just been an amazing journey, and I think that more people are starting to do that as you see these podcasts pop up and just Twitter chats pop up all over the place. It's been very cool.
You guys are more amazing in my mind than me because you're putting together this podcast. You're in two different locations. You know, Todd's got his fancy headset on. I'm just some guy that whips on my computer and can't even figure out Google Hangouts and spitting out gibberish, you know, things that I've learned. But, I mean, you guys are the true pioneers, you know, putting something together of value. And I like the microphone, too, by the way. That's really professional.
Yeah, no one, we never talked about the microphone.
This guy that, you know, thinks he knows what
We haven't ever actually talked about the microphone. I've used it. Yeah. I've used it from every episode.
I know nobody said anything.
No one's asked a word about it. But I have a little story behind the microphone. If you've ever played that game Rock Band that comes like with the Xbox 360, this is the microphone from that game. It's just like a little USB microphone. Normally I'm singing like Bon Jovi into this microphone, but tonight
good
we're
song choice. By the way.
Yeah, oh, you're a New Jersey guy, right?
Born and raised, but now I'm a New Yorker.
Okay.
Well, you also are quite the writer. You write for a lot of publications, and most recently you had a front page feature on the USA Weekend. Congratulations. But have you always been a writer?
I'm sorry I'm laughing because the people that know me best know that I am not a writer. I was a science teacher. I'm very concrete, sequential. And to me, writing does not come naturally. It's come more naturally with social media because I'm connected to thought leaders, practitioners, tons of ideas. But even to this day, it's still a struggle. And, you know, I guess going by using writing as an example, social media helped me overcome numerous fears that I've always had, writing being one of them, and the other one, and Todd, you might be surprised to hear this, public speaking.
I was
terrified to speak publicly. Yeah, but, you know, with the writing piece, you know, I have to give the credit to a man by the name of Ken Royal. I mean, Ken is a genuinely amazing guy. At the time, he was working for Scholastic. And he's like, you know what, Eric, I see these tweets. You got some great ideas. You got to elaborate on them. And Ken is the one that got me to, unwillingly at the time, to do some guest blog posts on his blog, The Royal Treatment. And I built my confidence from there. And then I launched my own blog as part of being at the Google Academy for Administrators. And still to this day, my mother insists that I have to send my blog posts before they're published so she can improve them. So I might be better now at coming up with ideas to blog about, but my grammar, I mean, I can't say spelling because I got spell check. My grammar, sentence structure, it's horrendous. But that shows you that if you have the right support structures in place, you can use technology to get those to the people that can improve them. You know, and with the books, same thing. It happened by accident. You know, I got a tweet one day from Bill Ferriter, who's at Plug Us In on Twitter. And he's like, hey, Eric, you want to write a book? And I'm like, what? But I'm like, wow. I have an opportunity to actually write a book, and I don't have to do really anything except write. So, you know, Bill and Jason Ramsden and I, we wrote this book all virtually and never met each other face-to-face, all three of us, until the book was published.
Wow.
And you know, that reminds me a little bit of
books, blogs, awards, all that stuff.
Did we lose him?
I couldn't hear what you said, Todd.
I was going to say, that reminds me a little bit of a book that was just put together recently by some flip class teachers. We were contacted, and each one of us wrote our own chapters, and the book came out last week, and getting a copy of it in my hands was so surreal because I've never met any of the other people on the show or on the in the book.
Yeah, you know what? It's like when you – I'm glad you brought the book topic up in the blogs because – it really just shows you that if you're willing to put yourself out there, to share your story, to tell your story, to absorb constructive feedback, to give feedback, to push on other people's ideas, I mean, the sky really is the limit. If someone asked me a few years ago or told me, hey, Eric, you know, you're gonna have written three books at this point in time, you're going to be asked to speak across all over the country and have all these incredible opportunities, I would have said, I don't know what I would have done. I don't know if I would have laughed, if I would have walked away in disgust, or if I would have clocked the person because they were crazy and I'm afraid they would stalk me for the rest of my life. It did not make any sense to me. It still doesn't make sense, but the one thing that does is that, you know, everybody has their own expertise, and it's just a matter of not being afraid to do things differently because social media is different for so many people, and I still experience that to this day where I'm met with a great deal of resistance and misunderstanding or even lack of support for what I do in social media spaces. But when I look at the flip side of what it's done for my school, what's done for my students and for me professionally, I just don't see how I could ever go back to the type of educator I was.
Do you encourage your staff to write or to blog?
Well, one of my my second book was co-written with one of my teachers.
Oh, okay.
That sort of was a prerequisite of mine with my publisher. They wanted me to do this book, and I said, well, I want one of my science teachers to do it with me. I encourage my teachers to blog. I do not force. I do not mandate. Mm-hmm. And taking that leadership path, giving teachers the autonomy and empowering them to do things differently has really paid dividends, because now numerous teachers are blogging. They have established class blogs with their kids. We now have students go out on their senior service projects. They have to blog while they're out there. So it's becoming an embedded part of our school because of the intrinsic motivation to blog. I model the best that I can. I offer up guest blog, blog posts on my blog with my teachers and students all the time. And it seems to be working, and it seems to be gaining traction.
Okay. Well, you're also a really big proponent of technology. How do you get those teachers on board who don't necessarily feel comfortable using technology?
Well, again, so just like blogging, you know, we look at technology just as a tool. And if you have the pedagogy down, technology can be a powerful tool to engage students, enhance learning, and ultimately increase achievement. So our golden rule is pedagogy first, technology second, if appropriate. If there's no natural fit for technology in your lesson, I am not going to force you, coerce you, or bug you to integrate technology, because it's just not going to be an effective use of the teacher's time.
Agreed.
Or financial aspect on my part. And what we've done is, again, you have a choice. If you want to use technology in your lessons effectively, we work on the pedagogy first. We provide the ideas, strategies, professional development, and then it's up to you. Now, when we started with this sort of transformation 4.5 years ago, you know, we weren't really using technology at all. And I grabbed about 4 of my teachers that I thought shared the same vision as me. We got in a room. I'm like, listen, these are some of the ideas I have. This is what I would like to see. I think if you all share my vision, we can do great things together. And I go, I will give you anything you need to be successful. MacBooks, interactive whiteboards, tablets, you name it. Anything was on the table. And the real catalyst for the change that we've seen in New Milford were those teachers and ultimately the students they worked with. Because through their actions, their modeling, their enthusiasm, their innovative activities, that started to move through our school like a wildfire. And I was sitting back with my feet up, not literally, but figuratively, just watching my staff work, because I gave them the space, I gave them the autonomy, I supported them when they needed it, I was flexible in terms of, like, if they wanted to Skype video conference with different time zones, we pull kids out of class. And you know, and we created a culture where taking calculated risks is expected, and if you fail, that's okay. The F word in our school is not a bad word anymore, because failure really opens the doorway up to learning. It is okay to make mistakes, just don't make the same mistake twice. And by taking that pressure away, making teachers really feel that they have ownership in their learning and ultimately convey ownership of learning to their students, that's been the secret to sort of our success with technology integration. It's not me per se, because I will be the first one to tell you that I do not know how to use every tool effectively. I can model many that I talk about at the basic level, but it's not my role to get into classrooms and integrate into lessons. My role is to provide PD, provide support, guidance, and get out of the way.
So you hit a little bit on this already, but if I were to walk around your school, I know that you're probably a little more advanced than a lot of schools as far as ed tech is concerned. What are some of the things that I would see there that may not be happening in schools across the country as far as ed tech is concerned? Like what kind of technologies are you guys using or your teachers using?
Well, I mean, we sort of are a great example of a hybrid environment, I think, where you're seeing the combination of traditional and non-traditional pedagogy strategies and environment. You know, what we're trying to do, our ultimate goal is to create a teaching and learning environment that parallels the world that our students are immersed in when they're not with us. The big disconnect in education is that students come to school and the environment is the exact opposite of the one they're used to, where they have that sort of unrestricted access to knowledge, that they use their tools and productive outcomes. And, you know, for us, the first step is, you know, you walk in, you know, to a building that was built in 1928. Will you still see desks in rows? Yes, because we don't have the money to get rid of all those desks that we have. But what you will see are students learning and empowered to make decisions and utilize any tool that they have at disposal to enhance their learning experience. So in classrooms, you'll see students on their phones, on the tablets that they bring, because we're a bring-your-own-device high school. You know, you'll see kids using their mobile learning devices, as we call them, to enhance their experience, whether it be taking notes in Google Docs, accessing files on Dropbox, storing their bookmarks in Digo or Delicious, doing portfolios in Evernote, or teachers using their devices as student response systems, using Poll Everywhere. So, you know, we have that. We also have students, you know, basically being placed in authentic learning experiences where we're video conferencing with experts in the different fields or areas of study. We recently had Greg Toppo speak to our digital journalism students. Greg is a national education reporter for USA Today. Dan Pink Skyped in, the best-selling author of Drive.
Cool.
And he Skyped in with all of our underclassmen academy students. So sort of like what we're doing right now, we're using technology to engage in a conversation. You know, we're using technology when appropriate to allow students to solve real-world problems using real-world tools. You know, we want them to have the skill sets, and this is hard to see when you walk in, are those skill sets that the college and career movement really wants. You know, collaboration, communication, creativity, global awareness, critical thinking, problem solving, entrepreneurship, and digital citizenship. So, you know, we have all those sort of essential skills that we are cultivating on a daily basis just with our environment. So when you look at a quick glance, we're not much different than everybody else. This is the end product, which is our students that are creating their own positive digital footprints. They're much more responsible online and can use their tools in ways that other students are just not being educated on how to do in other public schools in this country.
I love that. Well, looking back over your career, the last 5 or 10 years, if you could go back 5 or 10 years, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh, not to be so ignorant and stubborn when it comes to certain ideas that I'm personal with. I always think about where we'd be now if I'd gotten on social media a few years earlier. You know, I also think about some of what were hidden strengths, such as public speaking and I guess writing, that I never knew I had. And I think I was too consumed with fear and not having the fortitude to overcome those fears earlier in my career. I think if I did, you know, I can't even tell you where we might be right now. I'm proud of where we're at as a school, as a high school, but also of so much more work that we need to do that we might have been able to have tackled in the past. Being afraid all the time and not willing to take these risks that I seem to take now on a daily basis. You know, if I was, you know, 5-10 years ago, I would have said, you know what, Eric, you know, you got to do what's best no matter what results from it. And I just think that we could have been maybe in an even better position than we are now.
Right.
I kind of cringe when asking this question. This is like asking an interviewee question where you know they're just going to cringe in their chair, but we're going to go ahead and ask anyway. So what are some of the let's see. Where are we here? I'm sorry. I just lost my place. Did you take it out there?
No, what? It's not
there. You go. Okay. So, yeah, has there ever been a time in your career when you've just made a mistake and really learned from it? Just something you really just failed miserably at?
I fail every day.
Good.
I do. And I think that we need to be our biggest critics if we truly are in a, you know, a reflective practice where we have an opportunity to improve each and every day. You know, I miserably so many times. You know, I guess I'll use a social media example. Ship with Verizon. And Verizon Wireless gave us all these tablets to use for a couple of months. They put them in the hands of our kids and said, you know, we are a pilot group, let's report back. And I was so excited that, you know, I didn't really tell my superintendent. And I was at a conference in San Francisco and I tweeted about this. And yeah, some board members read it. They were all excited. And it went to my superintendent and said, hey, this is great about Verizon Wireless. And he was like, what? So he had no idea. So, you know, it was a great learning experience. I didn't get verbally reprimanded, but I appreciate the fact that he did say something to me because I learned that, you know what, I can't jump the gun. I have to make sure I'm communicating with my superiors so that we're all on the same page. You know, so that was one big mistake. I mean, there's other mistakes that, you know, obviously some people don't want to put out in public because we all make mistakes as professionals. It's
exactly
how we deal with those mistakes and how we learn from them to become better at what we do. That's what really matters. And that's why mistakes and failure are not our enemy, but an indispensable asset if we truly want to be the best educators we can be.
Now, we all also know that the impact that students have on our lives as teachers and administrators. Is there a particular story that you can remember about the impact maybe one of your students or maybe one of their parents had on you?
Oh, boy. I've had so many. I mean, the students really are what fuel my passion for what I do. And I think that's what really if we really truly love working with kids, we're working in schools. I mean, there's nothing better than that. And I remember my first year as principal in 2007. I was the first principal in the school's illustrious history to ever be acknowledged at graduation. I did not know this. They read all this stuff. I was in tears in the audience. They presented me a plaque on the stage of graduation. And this past fall, a year ago, students again presented me with a plaque commending me on, and it's not me, it's everybody, but, you know, I got a plaque where they said all these nice things about the direction that we're moving in Milford High School. And it's not because of me, it's because of them. I mean, so any type of moment where I know that I've had a positive impact on my students, and it does not have to be a student achievement or numbers, but when you really look into their eyes and you can tell by their emotions that what you're doing is a difference, those are the things that really stay with us forever.
Agreed.
So lastly, we have one last question. It's the passion question. What are you really passionate about right now in education? You can't say,
well,
iPads.
I'm passionate about continue move our district forward, move our school forward. Listen, I'm passionate about helping my staff get through this tumultuous time that we're a part of here in New Jersey, and I know other people are a part of, and just, you know, showing them that there is still hope for education as we know it, and that our number one stakeholder, our students, are depending on us. And we've seen the impact. You know, you can measure it so many different ways, you know, whether it be rankings, which if they go against us, we hate them, but if they go in our favor, we love them. Innovative programs, college acceptances, all this. So, you know, I'm just passionate about culture that lays the foundation for student success and that the community, my teachers, are proud of. That's what I'm passionate about. I'm just passionate about working with kids.
Yeah.
I think that's really awesome. Well, Eric, I thank you so much for being here with us today and letting us get and sit to talk with you, even with all the technical difficulties that we had to deal with. So thank you for being here.
Gentlemen, I thank you too. And, you know, even with some of the, I know I think I have some volume issues as well. I think I've learned a new skill this evening, which is lip syncing. I can finish your thoughts because something was cutting out, but I was able to get the questions down, I think. I appreciate you feeling that I have something of value, because something that valuable to share, because I don't think I'm special. I'm not special. Maybe my wife thinks I'm special. But, other than that, my kids and my parents, you know, but I appreciate what you guys are doing. Sort of taking the time out of your schedules to do something that you're passionate about. And you're passionate about sharing ideas. It's just a great time to be in education, I think, because we got people like the two of you that are going to be the cornerstones of our education system that are going to really turn this ship around and, benefit our kids in the future.
Yeah.
Well, again, we've really looked up to you since we've been on Twitter, so it's a big deal for us to get to talk to you because you were one of the first people Chris and I both followed. But thank you, listeners, that were here as well. The ways that you can connect with us, of course, are via our Twitter account at EduAllStarsHQ. You can also use the hashtag EduAllStars. You can find our website online at EduAllStars.com, and you can search us out on iTunes for EduAllStars on iTunes. We have a lot of really great guests coming up, including Todd Whitaker, which we're really excited about. And if y'all could go on and leave us a wrap review on iTunes, we would really appreciate it, because that really helps with our ratings and all that on the feedback on iTunes.
Yeah, let's not review the audio this session, though, so no reviews of that.
Yeah, please, because we do realize the audio issues we have had here today. So, but again, thank you, Eric. And before you leave, Eric, do you want to give everybody a clue of where they could find you online, your website, all that?
I'm sorry, I was not able to catch that question.
Why don't you share with us where we can find you online, your website, your Twitter?
Yeah, the best way to find me is my website. It's ericschenninger.com, ericschenninger.com. all my links to every space, digital space that I'm in, articles, all that stuff is there.
Well, and thank you again, and thank you, viewers, and we will see you next week.
Take care.